this episode of the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast.
I'm guessing it isn't necessarily it's by the sea, therefore it automatically makes a good SA unit.
It does depend on which sea. Yeah, if it overlooks a big oil refinery up in Aberdeen, that may not mean it's a good holiday location.
Welcome to Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.
Hi everyone, welcome to this week's episode of the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast. My name's Royce Turville, and today I'll be interviewing Frank about what is the secret to maximising profit in serviced accommodation.
Looking forward to it, Royce. It's going to be fun, mate.
Me as well, actually, Frank, because I currently don't have any serviced accommodation in my portfolio. So it's one of those subjects that I've always sort of listened into with curiosity, and it sounds great, and it sounds like a higher money making sort of strategy that we could focus on, and it's certainly something I'd love to get involved in at some point. Probably for me, it sounds it sounds like there's more to it, but hopefully you're going to talk us through it and give us the sort of pros and cons, and just let us know how we could maximize that profit. So should we kick off with? So it'd probably be a good idea to start off with what do you class as serviced accommodation? You know, what is it?
Yeah, good question, actually. I think there's been a lot of hype about SA, as the cool dudes call it. But actually, it's been around for decades. And your skepticism or your slight reservedness, I think, is very justified. The hype is often to sell training courses that are looking to take £1,000, £2,000, £3,000 off you for a day or two's education, in inverted commas, that really just brush over the details and give you the big picture, but not the actual how to do it. What is SA? Well, it's been around for a long time, and I see it as a alternative to a B&B or a hotel, and in its broadest possible sense. So in our SA portfolio, now I don't have a large service accommodation portfolio, but in ours we have blue collar workers, so people who are really just wanting a bed, a shower, warmth, and somewhere to eat their food or warm their food up. So it's from that very basic level where price, what they are actually paying, is their top priority. And when I say blue collar workers, I'm talking about largely Eastern Europeans, some British people, but mostly Eastern Europeans who are just traveling for work. They've migrated here for employment. They're sending a lot of money back home, and their top priority is to spend as little while they're here as possible. So that's one type that I'm involved in. We've also got city centre service accommodation, and that typically isn't for people on holiday. Very occasionally we'll have that, but it seems to be, and I'm just going based on my experience here, it seems to be people who are travelling for events. So occasionally it will be white collar workers because it's city centre, so they might be travelling for a specific reason. One particular apartment we have is a 3-bedroom apartment, nice lounge, nice kitchen diner, so that sleeps 6, and we might have some white collar workers from Rolls Royce or Toyota. Those are big employers in Derby. We also might have a travelling theatre company, so you might have the main roles come and stay, so they'll have 3 or 4 actors or actresses staying there for that. Or people travelling for weddings, when there were big weddings. They're a lot smaller now, people have them in their front rooms. But the people are travelling for weddings or like college or university graduations. We've even had people for cycling races and stuff. So they're generally travelling to a city for an event. So they're largely short-term stays, 2 nights, 3 nights. If it's work, it can be a week. Now, in both examples, we've also had stays of a month, 2 months, or 3 months. And that's often where people coming from overseas and they've got a fixed project, and they're wanting more of a home than a hotel can provide. The people that are staying for 1, 2, 3 nights, they're actually normally looking for cost. So it's cheaper to rent an SA unit for 6 people than to have 3 hotel rooms all paying a nightly rate. We're generally more expensive for 1 night, about the same as a hotel room for 2 nights, and cheaper longer term because we don't have the overheads of a hotel. And so once you start putting more people into that property than you can get into one hotel room, it becomes very economical. So that's the second type of SA. The third type is holiday accommodation, so actual holiday lets. So we've got a portfolio up on the Yorkshire coast. We've got 3 holiday lets there. We've got a 2-3 beds, 3 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms, 2 of those, and a 4-bed, 3-bathroom holiday let, all overlooking the beach, all in really nice seaside locations. They are exclusively for people going on holiday. I don't think we've ever had any other type of tenant, or guest, actually, is the correct term. And very rarely will people go for 1 night. We do offer it, but it's very, very expensive because of the cleaning costs. We typically see people going for 3 nights, so a long weekend, or 4 nights for a long weekend, or 5 or 7 nights. That's the norm. We accept dogs into one of those, up to 2 dogs, which is quite unusual, but people want to go to the beach with their whole family and their dogs. And so those are the 3 main types of service accommodation that I've been involved in. There are other types, but those are the 3 main ones. And each are quite different. Each have a different level of management, a different type of marketing, and a very different profit model. And different seasonality as well. So within SA, you've kind of got those 3 different types.
That's good. It's a good breakdown. It makes it clear to understand that separation. How would you go about identifying what would make, what would stack up a good SA property, etc.? Because obviously, you've clearly separated those 3 different type of properties, but as people who have previously listened will know, we don't go out and sort of target these properties, do we? But like, if one of these properties came up as an opportunity for us to buy it, what would you do to kind of analyze it and think, oh yeah, this would make a good SA unit? I'm guessing it isn't necessarily it's by the sea, therefore it automatically makes a good SA unit, or it's a flat in the city centre. Or is it? I don't know.
It does depend on which sea. Yeah, if it overlooks a big oil refinery up in Aberdeen, that may not mean it's a good holiday location. It might be great for migrant workers, however. So yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. How do you identify it? The listeners aren't going to perhaps like this answer, but on gut feel is the honest answer. And maybe you peel back a few layers and you say, well, based on common sense, I've seen a lot of, come on this course and you'll get this SA unit analyzer. So we had a whole spate of rent to rent and then rent to SA, so you pay £500 a month in rent and then you whack it out at £1,000 a week for SA, and look how many thousands you can make a month on it, and you plug it all into this spreadsheet and abracadabra, look, it's brilliant. I don't put nearly as much weight into statistical analysis like that, or number crunching as some people do. I very much, you're absolutely right, Royce. I have service accommodation as a monetization strategy that we look at once we've found the property. Well, actually, we find the vendor, then we find the property, and then we work out what the monetization will be, which helps us to solve the vendor's problem. So you have got a 3-bedroom property, let's say, on the coast, and you've had a chat with the vendor and they're motivated. They've got a specific reason for selling, one of any of our 42 reasons. You know, they can they'll have one of those, otherwise they won't be speaking to us. And part of solving their problem is to work out, okay, what's available to us? What will this property produce for us each week, each month, etc., in order for us to be able to solve their problem? And then you start looking at the property. So it's quite a long way down the process. If it was quite a picturesque property, if it had parking, because a holiday location needs parking. People aren't going to travel with their families and their dogs on a train and jump in a taxi. I can't think of anyone who hasn't parked their car outside a holiday cottage. So if our holiday cottage didn't have parking, that would be a problem. And it's these pragmatic things, which you can work out, they're logical, but it's quite hard if you have never done SA before to kind of think through them analytically. So that would be a deal breaker. If it's because it's rural and it's on the beach, it overlooks the beach, but because of that, you can't walk to the railway station. The railway station is about 4 miles away. Is it possible that you could catch a train there? Now, the railway station is a really minor railway station that's on a single line, you know. It takes about an hour to get from the nearest town to that little town. So, yes, yeah. Practically, they could get a train and then a taxi, but no one ever will. So, you know, forget about it in terms of bookings. There has to be a reason for each. So, yes, is it really beautiful? As in, you know, could it be in the Derbyshire Dales, Yorkshire Moors, New Forest, etc.? Is it, and that could be for hiking or mountain biking or dog walking or something like that. Is it near the coast? The coast is always a good one. Is it near a tourist destination? You know, if you had a little cottage near Stonehenge, for example, 20 minutes from Stonehenge, perhaps that would appeal. I'm not sure it would. It may not be a big enough attraction for a whole week or something, but you need to be thinking, why are people going to want to come to this? Now, you can create that desire. So I put a lot of store in paying experts money to fill my gaps in knowledge. So I pay a marketing company for our holiday lets, so the ones where people are going to go on holiday. We pay them 18% for very little. In fact, I'm selling one at the moment, and the gentleman that's buying it cannot believe that I'm paying 18%. And it's because he's looking at it as, well, they just do some marketing and give you bookings. Like, he thought they would be sorting the cleaning out for us. They'd be doing the maintenance like a letting agent would and all that. They don't. All they do is say, here's Fred and he's booked this week, and they take 18% for that. Well, what he's missing is, I think that particular company spend about 20 million a year on Google AdWords and their marketing campaign. Yeah. So that's what you're buying. You're buying that exposure. But they said to me, so when we first went into our first holiday let about 6 years ago, that was our first ever service accommodation. We've now got a hotel with 28 rooms. We've got the three holiday lets, and we've got the one city centre apartment. Those are the properties that we've got. So in terms of actual units, that's what, 28 and 3 and 4 for 32, but actually it's only 5 properties. So I'm not speaking from tons of experience. That said, a lot of our partners have done SA. I've recently recorded an episode with David and Matthew, who've got a portfolio of 50 plus SA units. So I've got a lot of experience through my clients as well. And this company that we pay 18% to, I said to them, do you think we should put a jacuzzi in the back garden? Now, I love jacuzzis. For me, that makes a holiday. The back garden looks over 5 miles of beach. It's absolutely stunning. I couldn't think of anything nicer than sitting there with a beer or a G&T of an afternoon and looking at this wonderful view. And they said categorically not, because people are going to come here for that view. Don't add on the cost. You basically need at least a weekly, but preferably a daily visit from a maintenance guy to test the water and stuff on a jacuzzi. It just isn't worth it. They said, don't bother. And I said, so would you never put a jacuzzi in a holiday let? I'm always trying to learn. And they said, oh no, absolutely not. So we've got a couple of properties 5 miles inland. they were never going to let. No one wants to be 5 miles from the beach and 5 miles from a nice walk and all that until you put something in the back garden, and then they're happy to drive to the attractions because they've got somewhere, they've got a reason to be in your cottage. So they did a jacuzzi in the back garden, and that sold that property. It was really well, yeah. You know, got really good occupancy. So if I think through our other properties, three of them are on the beach. The city centre one is a 400-yard walk to the absolute city centre. Well, that's just amazing. And when you see it, it's like an oasis. It's three bedrooms. It was designed by an architect. I bought it already furnished and everything. And it's won awards. And it's like an oasis so close to the city centre. It's untrue. You can have a great night out and stagger home. So that's why that one's so popular. It also has parking, so people can drive there with all their stuff, leave the car all week long, and never have to get in it again because everything's on their doorstep. So that's probably the reason, the location is the reason for that one. In terms of the hotel, it's the only hotel in that particular town. It's, I think I'm right in saying, £24 a night, which undercuts the hotels in all the neighbouring towns, which are 20 minutes away, 15 minutes, 20 minutes away, by about £50 or £60 a night. So it's saving people a ton. They're paying about a third of what they pay otherwise. And local B&Bs are probably at the same kind of level. So our USP there, it's not particularly pretty building. It's not got great transport links. You can walk to a pub, you can walk to the shop. So that's quite handy for people that don't have transport, because migrant workers, you know, transport is going to be expensive for them if they don't want to own a car, etc. Some of them do. But the biggie for that one is it's just cheap. And so people are drawn to it because it's cheap. We have amazing occupancy in it for that very reason. So I think your original question, Royce, is how do you decide? Well, the first thing you need to decide is, why are people going to stay there? What is unique about it, especially at the moment? At the moment, I'm staying in central London tonight. I've got meetings early morning, tomorrow morning. I cannot believe how cheap hotels are. I think I'm staying in King's Cross, and I don't stay in particularly nice hotels when I'm traveling for business. I might do on holiday, but for business, I'm happy to stay in a Premier Inn or something similar. And it's generally, you know, £100 a night is what I'm expecting to pay in London. Often £130 a night, though, £140 perhaps if it's busy in the city. I've got a Premier Inn tonight for, I think, £60 or something, £62. Wow. It's like half what it normally is. And that's crazy. Like, you can't get it in Derby for that normally. Right. And I appreciate there's a discount in the VAT at the moment. They're charging 5% rather than 20%. But that doesn't account for 50% of the prices, because yeah, there's no demand. And you look at the SA units, and they were all coming up on Trivago when I was having a look yesterday to book it. And you've got these apartments that were, you know, guaranteed to bring in £5,000 a month or £2,000 a month, and the deal equaliser or the spreadsheet was saying it was a no-brainer to go for it. Well, that's not true if all you're doing is offering the same as everyone else. So I think it's really important to have something else that's going to attract people. What is your USP going to be? Because it's kind of the same when you let a property on a single AST to a family or an individual. But when you're doing that, it's a much simpler business model. There is always rental demand, unless you really stuff up and buy somewhere where there's a massive oversupply of property. But I've never struggled to rent a property. I have had to drop the right price on a property. Maybe I've thought it's going to get me £600 a month, and I then try a 575, and I finally let it 2 months later at 550. You know, that's as big as a mistake I've ever made in renting a single AST property. But if you get it wrong on a service accommodation, not only have you furnished it, which has cost you £5,000-£10,000 potentially, and has painted you into a corner, because now what do you do if you want to let it on a single AST? You've got all this furniture in it. but also, you've then got, if you only get 40% occupancy, and you did all your figures on 70% occupancy, you're losing money. So yeah, it's there's a lot to consider, I guess, is the answer, Royce. I could talk all day about it, but I'll let you ask some more questions, mate. But does that make sense, what I said so far?
Absolutely, yeah. Kind of like you're looking at fundamentals around a holiday let, basically, aren't you? You're trying to pick those things out within that area and make sure they're there. So yeah, makes absolute sense. Here's a good one then. So how much money do you actually make on a holiday let then? So I'll give you the example. So say we have a holiday let that has four rooms and you're renting them out for £50 a night. And some people might just calculate that by saying, right, I've got £50 a night times four, let's say 30 days in the month. So that's six. So I'm going to make £6,000 on that per month. And then that's it. They might go for it. Now, I'm guessing that's not the reality and they're not the true reflection as to how much profit you would make or what you should be calculating. So what sort of things have you got to kind of consider around it that's going to chip into that, you know, what somebody might get dead excited about, £6,000 a month?
Four rooms at £50 a night, is that what you said? Is that per room? Is that what you're, I lost you on the maths there. So you're saying £200 a night. And how many nights were you expecting?
30. So,
so we're going for an extreme example here.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
exactly.
30
but
times.
This is how some people might get excited about
it. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like, and that's six grand per month. And then a throwaway comment like, well, you've got to pay £500 rent, but, you know, who cares about that? And of course, there's a few bills, but, you know, that's cool. Yeah. And you're like, wow, so I'm going to clear £5,000 a month or £5,500 a month. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, that's exactly how it works, Royce. So go buy some and you'll be laughing, mate. All right, should we wrap up there?
I'm off.
Yeah. Go, hang on. I need £2,000 for my course. That was my course, mate. That was an hour course. Yeah. So exactly. you laugh, but we won't go there. So let me do a comparison, a real comparison. So let me use my city centre apartment. Now, these aren't precise figures, but I know my numbers on all of my portfolio pretty accurately. So let me give you an overview. So it is worth about, it's worth currently about 110K, maybe slightly more. And rent on that as a single ST would be about, I think, solid 550 a month. 550 per calendar month. Because this is what you should always start with. You should always start with plan B. And plan B on this, and it might be plan C or plan D, but your worst case scenario, and we've talked about this before on the podcast, is the cake. You got to bake your cake and then the layers of icing go on top.
Absolutely.
So if your SA doesn't work, it can't be SA's got to work, otherwise I go bankrupt. That's crazy. SA could not work for millions of reasons, not least of all COVID, you know, or whatever else pops up. You know, a big hotel is built next year, next door to your little SA unit or whatever. So you've got to make sure it stacks as a simple deal where you're definitely going to be able to monetize it. So 550 a month. Let me just grab my calculator. £110,000. So times that by 75%, you've got a mortgage of 82.5. Times that by getting lending at about 4% at the moment, something like that, maybe a little bit more. So you've got 12, that's 275 a month interest only mortgage. 275 per calendar month. What else would you have on a single AST? You'd have insurance of maybe £35 a month, and you'd have
maybe voids.
You'd have voids and maintenance. Yeah, absolutely. Now, on a single AST, if you factor in a month a year, that'd probably be reasonable. So our month is 550. So you divide 550 by 12. That gives you a £45 cost of a void. I'm rounding down there. I'm not going to do the pence. And you've also got maintenance. Depends on the property, depends on the age of the property, etc. But if we put something like £50 a month in for maintenance, that'd probably be reasonable. So let's just have a quick look at that. 550 minus 275 minus 35 minus 45 minus 50 is £145 per calendar month. Net profit before tax. Happy with my maths on that, Royce? Good with that?
Yep. Yep, still not quite at my $6,000 a month yet, though, are you?
No, but that's our plan B. That's plan B, C or D, depending on how many monetization strategies. Yeah. But yes, we're a long way off 6K. But that's to a family that are paying $550 a month. So let's look at how we monetize that on an actual property. So I know that this property brings in around, now it's very seasonal SA, and you need to be looking at a year. You can't really look at a month. So some of my beach places, those holiday lets, they're bringing in August and in Christmas and New Year, $1,200 a week, $1,300 a week, even $1,450 a week. Now, that company that does our marketing, I'll share it with the listeners, it's cottages.com. I think they're phenomenal. They used to be Cottages for You. They've rebranded. I do think they're excellent, and they're not paying me to say that. Although they do charge, they start their pricing at 21%. So I probably shouldn't have told everyone the commission I've negotiated down to, but I'll get a slap on the wrist for that perhaps. But, that's between you and me, dear listener. So they are not only picking a band. This is the difficulty with making projections in service accommodation. You look at it and you go, well, what do I get a week? Well, on one particular, that same property that gets, let's call it an average of 1400 a week, right? At the best weeks of the year, might only get 3 or 4 weeks at that, but it's £1,400 a week. The lowest week of the year is, there's 1 week in November and 1 week in January, £350 a week. Now, at £350 a week, that breaks even, that property. It's barely worth having anyone in because you've got wear and tear. But after you've paid bills, think about it, November and January, really expensive, loads of gas. It's off mains gas because it's so rural. So it's really expensive, the gas. People have loads of heating on because it's cold. They burn fuel. Like, we have nice, cozy log fires. So they burn logs and stuff. And we've still got to clean it, but it's dirtier because it's winter and there's mud and the dogs are out in the garden and stuff. We've still got to launder all the bedding and everything. So we probably break even roughly at 350 a week. Compared to in August, there's very little fuel because it's a timber frame building and it's August, so it's roasting. People aren't lighting a fire necessarily of an evening, and there might be a bit of sand, but there's less mud and that, so cleaning's probably quicker and easier. So actually our profit margin is let's say it makes us, maybe we earn 50 or 100 quid out of that 350 in January. We might be clearing £1,000, maybe even £1,100 in the same week in August. And so it's a 10 times, 11 times better return. So what this company do is they pick a band for your property. So they actually came out, they valued it, and they said, look, we got them, we always get them out, we use them as like a partner, we don't use them like a letting agent. They know more about service accommodation than we ever will. And so when I was doing the big development where we've done the 3-bed and the 4-bed, it's like a semi-detached, it was a single dwelling, and we've split it into, it was almost falling down, and we've extended it backwards, we've extended it upwards, we've added 6 bathrooms to it, we've added, it was a 3-bed, 1 bathroom, it's now total of 7 bedrooms, 7 bathrooms. So it's 7 bedrooms, 7 bathrooms, the 3-bed's got 4 bathrooms, I just remembered. So we've done a massive development, spent a couple hundred grand on it. Now, before we did the development, we got them over and we said, what should we build here? What would be best? And we were chatting to them. We've talked to them all the way through the development. What should the room sizes be? What should the layout be? They said, look, given that you're starting from a clean slate, put a disabled ramp in, have a disabled wet room downstairs and a king size bedroom with a wide door. Like, I never would have thought of something like that. But it now means we're wheelchair access on one side. Yeah. They said, put a dividing door, like you have in a hotel, between the two houses, so that people can take both, because between them they sleep 18. That's an extended family for all of Christmas and New Year. And it's little things like that, but actually they're not little, they're absolutely massive. They said on the first holiday let dogs come, because this is a bit tired, you're not going to get the wear and tear, etc. On the new ones, they said these are like 4-star standard, these are beautiful, don't allow dogs, you don't need them, you've got jacuzzi, hot tubs in, jacuzzi baths. One of the baths, right, two-person jacuzzi, it's like a swimming pool, looks out over the glass balcony to the sea and 5 miles of beach. You know, they're like, don't let dogs in here, they'll be swimming in your hot tub. You know? So it's about that knowledge. So they give you a banding. So they said at the start of the development, this should be a band, I forget what it is, like a band X or something, like really high on their banding through A through Z, you know. The other one was a band M, I want to say. But what that means is it means 350 in January on M, 1400 in August, and then down to whatever it might be, 750 in September. But they tell you what the market rent for your property is going to be based on the banding. Very, very clever, because they know what it goes up by. They know when February half term is. They know when October half term is.
Yeah.
You can have, let's say February half term is the 20th of Feb, right? That's the Friday where everyone breaks up. On the 13th of Feb, you can let that property for maybe 500 quid. On the 20th of Feb, you're getting maybe 950 for it. It's crazy for that 1 week.
Wow.
And then the next week it's 500 again, because that's the, you know, so but they know that, so they won't let someone book in 2 years time for 500, which could easily happen if you were doing it in an unsophisticated way yourself on Airbnb or something. But here's the clever thing, and you know, this guy that's quibbling over the 18% and kind of insinuating that I'm wasting my money with them, they do this thing called dynamic pricing. So across their whole portfolio, and they have thousands of cottages, you could probably go on and find how many cottages they actually have, but they have this thing called dynamic pricing, whereby if other properties are going quickly, so we saw a massive spike when lockdown ended, like we took 3 or 4 months of bookings within the space of about 10 days. This dynamic pricing is an algorithm that measures interest in your property and interest in similar properties across the country, and puts the price up or drops it within a parameter of 20% either way based on that level of interest. I just think that's amazing. So when lockdown ended in July or whenever it did, our prices for, and we just had no income for 3 months, and we can touch on that another time. You know, that's why you don't want to be 100% in one strategy. It didn't matter to us because we had our portfolio supporting it, but it was painful to have so many empty. The holiday ones are empty, but the blue collar workers were still here on the whole. But the dynamic pricing sensed that everyone was booking their summer holidays. And so the 1400 very quickly became like 1800. Which is brilliant, because we got those. So we probably made, I don't know, £600 more. No, more than that. 4 times 3, £1,200 more, just because the algorithm kicked in really quickly for us. And similarly, right now, we're struggling with bookings for the new year because people don't want to book that far ahead. They don't know if they're going to be in lockdown. We would ordinarily have Christmas booked now. We'd have New Year booked. We'd have good bookings for Jan, Feb, March. We haven't. It's like the next 2 months are jam-packed solid, but people haven't got that confidence for obvious reasons. No. Will the property itself be in lockdown? Will they not be able to get to it? Or will their hometown be in lockdown and they won't be able to leave? Will someone be sick? You know, will they have a job then? There's a lot of reasons why there's uncertainty. But now, people that go on the site will be able to pick that 350 quid property up for 280, for example, because that dynamic pricing's kicked in. So very, very clever how they do it. So coming back to that then, as a long description, this same property that would get 550 a month, it nets us about £1,000 per month. That's after all costs before tax. Now, for one night, this is 3 bedrooms, sleep 6, for one night, I think we charge about £130, something like that. Now, you can get a hotel in Derby ordinarily, not at the moment, it's cheaper at the moment, but ordinarily you can get a hotel room in Derby for about £55, £65.
Yeah.
So it's about double, just about, but obviously it's a whole property. Now, the price for a week is probably only, and this is very approximate because it's different times of year, but probably only £400 a week, something like that, maybe slightly more. And then the price for a month, I'd say, is probably something like £1,500 a month, maybe slightly more. And then you'd get 3 months for maybe £2,700, something like that. So I'm just giving you approximate prices. So because Airbnb allows people to book for, I think, up to 3 months. This one isn't on cottages.com because it's not a holiday cottage. It's more of a city centre apartment. You've then got cleaning. So our three-bedroom, three-bathroom property costs £90 a clean. Our three-bedroom, one-bathroom property costs £50 each time. You've got bills. You've still got the same mortgage from before, so the 275, because you own it in the same manner. You've still got your £35 insurance. Now, the voids, and this is the difficulty with SA. How do you work your voids out? Like, I've just given you a load of numbers. I've done you £130 a night. So
yeah,
if you do 30 nights at that, you're not far off your £6,000, are you? You're a little under it.
But, exactly.
But what do you do? Do you do 3 weeks at £400? Do you do the whole month at £1,500? It's so hard, and you don't know. And we've had times where we've had people in for 3 months and we think, wow, we've just paid our year's mortgage in 3 months pretty much. Well, that's amazing. But then you have a void for a month and you've got two weekends taken and you think, oh, we've lost money this month. And that's, and it can be because there weren't graduations that month. It can be just because you're unlucky. You know, there was a big marathon. You had a load of people wanting it, but you can only let it once. You know, all that kind of stuff happens. So to give you an example, and we could do a whole podcast on how do you work that out? How do you forecast it? You can look at occupancy levels. You can look at availability at different times of year. The best way is just to speak to people that have done it, you know, as in sure, people that are running these, etc. What can they expect in terms of occupancy? Some of mine run at very close to 90% occupancy. Others run down at just under 70%. Well, that's a big difference. But let's use the £1,000 because I know that is what it is. It's about £12,000 a year after all those costs. So that's after direct costs of cleaning, etc. It's after, and marketing. It's after indirect costs of your bills and your utilities, etc. Bearing in mind, you've got stuff like broadband, Sky TV, you know, these are things people expect, espresso machines, a bottle of wine when they arrive on the table, you know, and people, you started off by saying, you know, is it a lot more work? Absolutely. Like, who's going to buy all the bottles of wine? Who's going to put them on the table with the biscuits? Yeah. You know, these are all things that we put a 2 pint of milk in the fridge. We make sure there's sugar there for people. We make sure there's dishwasher tablets for people. Someone has to go do that. And with my size portfolio, it ain't going to be me, the utmost respect. So that all needs systemizing. Yeah. So, but then it's not really. And so people go, £50? God, it must only take 2 hours. Yeah, but then they've got to go to the shop and then they've got to do all the washing, and then they've got to do all the ironing, and then they've actually got to store it, and then they've got to put it on the bed, and then there's a lost piece of item, you know, a lost property. Who's going to post that to them? There's quite a lot to it, and it definitely is a business. So the difference there is approximately 4 to 5 times more profit is realistic. So if you look at it, sure, 145 a month and £1,000 a month. So if it was £200 a month, it'd be 5 times, wouldn't it? I think a good rule of thumb is you can expect to quadruple your profit. You may even do a bit better. I've done quite a bit better there. We were at £5,000 a month profit, weren't we? That was our imaginary figure that was possible in a yeah, novice's eyes. And we're at 145. I can't even work that out. But let's just do it just for comedy value. 5,000 divided by 145. That's 34 times the profit. Yeah. That's Mickey Mouse. You know, we're talking, yeah, about 4 or 5 times the profit. And with significant extra work. And I'll happily go through the extra work that is required, because you live and die by your reviews. And so you get an awkward customer. We had one 2 or 3 weeks ago. And my wife, she does the calls for our holiday lets. She loves it. And she's a people person. And that's one of the few things she still does in our business. After speaking to the gentleman, she said, he's going to leave a rubbish review. And he hadn't even been there yet. It's a week before his stay. It's like she called him out of courtesy to say, you know, is it a special event? Would you like me to, like, she scripted it. She's an awesome salesperson. She's, yeah, like, can I recommend any restaurants for you or whatever? And he like told her off for interrupting his day. And she just phoned to be nice. And like, can I help? Just phoning to let you know the key, wow, safe number so you can access it. And she was like, oh, you can just tell sometimes. Lo and behold, like, and this is a funny story, right? And it explains why service accommodation is a business. It's not like I talk about property being highly leveraged. Service accommodation isn't. It's hard work. Unless you get to the point that Dave and Matt are at, where they've got 50 and they've got a general manager, but they've got an ex-hotel manager running their SA units. Like that's what you need. You need someone who's like lives and breathes hospitality. Because we're only doing a few, my wife can do it, you know, it's a couple of calls a week, plus sorting out the odd problem. That same gentleman that had a great attitude when she first phoned him, texted to say... She gives her personal mobile to them. You know, any problems, let me know. We've got a maintenance team nearby that can pop round. The cleaning team can pop round. And he texted to say the dishwasher's broken. Can you sort it? So we sent around one of our maintenance guys and he's checked it. And it turned out that the error light was, there was no salt in the dishwasher. Well, there's salt in the cupboard, as in dishwasher salt. So... the maintenance guy put the dishwasher salt in and that turned the error light off, but it still wasn't draining for some reason. Like there were two issues with this. The dishwasher salt had just come on by chance. And then there was this problem and he couldn't work it out. So then came back to Vanda, my wife. She phoned a local dishwasher expert. He went out. It turns out the guests themselves had broken a glass in the dishwasher. Not told anyone. The bit of glass had got stuck in the dishwasher. Now, between this happening, now this was all on one day, right? I kid you not. They phoned in the morning. Our maintenance guy went out in the morning. The dishwasher expert repairman went out in the afternoon, the same afternoon. And in the meantime, Vandred said, "Oh, I'm so sorry about the inconvenience. I'd love to, if you pop me across your bank details, I'll transfer £30 for you to go and get fish and chips for yourself and your wife," which I thought was a lovely little touch, you know. It's a gesture, isn't it? You know, these things happen, but it shows that we care. So then we found out that it was broken by the guest. Basically, they've broken a glass and it jammed the vent at the bottom of the dishwasher, and the guy said. The guy texted Vanda actually from it and said something along the lines of, "It's been fixed the same day. I'm guessing we won't get our £30 now," or something like that. And she said, "No, absolutely. I've already transferred it." You know, or no, she hadn't actually transferred it, but "No, absolutely. I'll still transfer it. Enjoy the fish and chips," something like that. And we still got I forget what the review was, but we average something like 9 out of 10 across everything. And this particular review was a 7, which is like really bad for us. It's most people give it 10 out of 10 for most things. And because we only have, like in that, they're generally weeks, and so we might only have 40 guests a year. So when someone puts a 7 out, and not many leave reviews, you know, you might only get 10% leave reviews. So now we've got 4, 5, or 6 a year leaving reviews. Maybe you get a few more than that. Maybe you get 10 a year. But someone puts in a 7, and of course the people that are unhappy always put in a review. and so that's pulled our average down. It might still be at 9 out of 10, but it may well have dropped to like 8.7. And when people are looking at your reviews, 9 and above, it's like, "Oh, that's an awesome place." Below 9, it's like, "Oh, let's have a closer look." You know, it really makes a difference. Some people will only book places above a 9. I think that's pretty awesome service myself. I've been and stayed places where I've had much worse service than that, and still thought, "Do you know what? They're away for the weekend. I've had to wait 3 days for the for the washing machine to be fixed," or whatever it was. Yeah. So yeah, it is. It's definitely harder work, and it definitely is a business in and of itself. But yeah, 4 to 5 times additional profitability if you get it right.
That's given a more realistic picture of what's possible, I suppose, because that headline figure, if you went running into everyone like that, you could end up in a little bit of trouble, couldn't you, potentially, without knowing all of that. You've covered everything, you know, really well, and given me a better understanding, and I'm sure our listeners of how we can maximize that profit. If you were to kind of pick out, I suppose, two or three of the key things that you would, you know, say, make sure you do these things when trying to maximize profit, or look out for these things. So just to kind of summarize it, what would you say is really important? You know, make sure you do this, this, and this when you're venturing into serviced accommodation, or SA, as the cool kids call it.
Exactly. Yeah. Few things. First off, I would do it myself. So don't think you can just outsource this and be clever with your leverage and that. This is a intensive business. You're dealing with people. If your first few reviews are rubbish because you haven't got your system sorted, you're not going to get any more bookings. So it has to be you doing it. Don't think you can do it on 20 minutes a week. You're going to have to be responsive. You're going to have to call people before they go. You're going to have to call them afterwards. You should. Best practice is you don't have to, but it will affect stuff. So you're going to have to call them before. You're going to have to call them afterwards. Check they had a nice holiday and stuff. We get loads of repeat bookings for that reason. We've had the property 6 years. We've got people that have stayed there 8-9 times, you know, so that speaks volumes. So don't outsource too early. Absolutely don't outsource too early. We're on probably our fourth set of cleaners in 6 years because they couldn't live up to our standards. Like, we had guests turn up and someone had left a pair of pants on the top of the shower, like hanging up to dry, like the guests had left them there, and the cleaners had presumably cleaned the bathroom but hadn't notice these pants hanging up. And then so the people walk in, he's done all that hard work to get goodwill, and then they're like, oh. You know, with the best attitude in the world, that's going to be a little underwhelming, isn't it? Like, what else has been missed? Especially yeah. In times like these when people are focused on cleanliness and sanitation and stuff. And so do it yourself, because you can add the personal touch quite easily. You can understand what the business entails. That's decent money, isn't it? £1,000 a month, or whether it's £800 a month, that's worth an hour a week of your time. So put the hour or 2 hours a week into it. I'm not saying you have to clean it yourself, but I'm saying you have to manage the property yourself. However, cleaning it yourself, you do need to the first few times, because you can't employ someone to do something you don't know how to do yourself, in my opinion. You know, because if the cleaner takes 2 hours to do it, how do you know if it should be an hour or 3 hours? You just can't know. You know, how can you decide what you should be paying if you don't know? So Vanda did clean all of our holiday lets, actually, the first few times, to time it, to write a system for how it needs to be cleaned, to write the checklist for it, so that when the cleaners then start doing it, because we live 2.5 hours drive away from those beach places, we can't go and inspect a clean afterwards. That's not viable. We sometimes have two stays in the same week. So the way that you're going to then manage the cleaners needs to be systemized. So they fill out checklists, they have to take a photo of the feedback form that the guests have left, and then those get emailed to us so that we can stay on top of, you know, has the clean been done? Is there any concerns? They have to write in the box if there's any breakages, the cleaners do. They have to write in the box if there's any maintenance issues that need addressing, etc., etc. So that would be the first thing. Second thing is get it legal. So make sure you're insured for holiday lets. The number of people that just think you can take a buy-to-let property with a buy-to-let mortgage on it and whack service accommodation clients in all year round. Check your terms and conditions on your mortgage. Often you can't do that. And people think that breaking the terms, sometimes people think that you can break the terms and conditions of your mortgage and it doesn't really matter. Well, if you check the terms and conditions of your insurance policy, often it's voided if you've broken the terms of your mortgage. So all of a sudden, your little bit of service accommodation, which is so easy to prove. Now, a lot of buy-to-let mortgage policies will say you can do short-term lets for up to 90 days a year. But let's say the house burns down, right? No one in it, just material damage, but you've got a 200 grand house that's now a 40 grand plot with some ashes on it, right? You go to your insurers, they're going to do their absolute utmost to, within the rules of their policy, not pay you. That's their job. They want to make money by taking a premium off you and not paying you when something goes wrong. And if you've broken the terms of your insurance, they're justified in not paying you. So they will look at how, like, who, first questions. I've had a house catch fire, seriously catch fire. It was a massive claim. They sent in a forensic fireman. I don't know a better name for it. He basically put on a boiler suit, put on gloves, hat. This is before like COVID. This is like he put on like breathing apparatus and spent 2 hours in a burnt out house taking little test tubes of samples and stuff. They were looking for accelerants. They thought that there was some foul play. I imagine that's what they do. Maybe they do it on every house. I have no idea. they were looking for reasons not to pay out. They wanted to know my whole portfolio. They were every single property. They wanted to know who they were insured with. Why? Because they want to check I've not done this on other properties, I imagine, or there haven't been suspicious claims on any of them. They're just looking for reasons not to pay. So it's very simple for them to check, oh, it's been on Airbnb for the last 3 years. Let's check the rent. Oh, look at that. It's been over 90 days a year. Whew, 190 days that year. And then can you just confirm that you're within the terms of your mortgage? Well, yes, it's within 90 days. Yeah, but you've let it for 190 days. So you're actually, and it's so easy. But then all of a sudden you're not insured and you just lost, what do we say, 200 grand house that's now a 40 grand plot. Yeah, lost £160,000 there. So being legal, making sure you've got planning permission. Some boroughs now in the UK are really clamping down on SA. And my prediction is that unlawful SA, so service accommodation, fits within C1 planning class, which is hospitality, I can't remember the exact word, but it's basically hotels and B&Bs. That's where most service accommodation fits in. Now, it can also fit into C3, which is residential, but you have to be ever so careful and you mustn't mix and match. So you can't say, oh, it's C3. And so I don't need planning permission and then pay business rates because you're then saying it's actually C1 and I'm paying business. Yeah. And it's fine if you've got it one way, but then you can't claim with HMRC on a furnished holiday let basis, which is a far more lenient asset class than residential buy to let, for example. So furnished holiday let is not caught within the mortgage rate relief issues, so you're fine there, but you can't be claiming it as a furnished holiday let and then have it on a buy-to-let mortgage and be paying C3 residential council tax. Do you know what I mean? But people get themselves in a right fuddle. So make sure that your architect and your planning consultant, your accountant and your lettings person or your SA person are all joined up and you're all calling it the same thing and you're within all the rules. That would be a biggie for me, and I think that's massively glossed over. The compliance side of it is massively glossed over, I think. It goes without saying, smoke alarms, carbon monoxide alarms and all of that. I think my third tip would be, don't underestimate, this is a new business. Like, if buying property is a business and letting it out, you know, buying buy-to-lets and letting them out, that's a business. If you're doing property on the side, what they call it, the cool kids, I like that phrase, the cool kids call it a side hustle now, don't they? So if property is what you do on the side of your job or to the in your spare time to your business, for your main business, then be aware, doing SA on one or two or three of them is another business. Even just one of them, it's another business. There's a whole new load of stuff to learn. And if you don't work on it, you know, if you just whack it on Airbnb and get no bookings, you haven't made £1,000 that month. You've just lost, what did we say, £305 that month. You've lost that. So you're actually £1,300 worse off because you didn't find 3 hours that month to sort out your Airbnb posting, or you didn't respond quickly enough to the inquiries on Airbnb. So you've lost your super host status and now you're not being promoted as well. You know, there's a lot to stay abreast of. And if you start using more than one channel, you need a channel manager. Well, that's quite an IT job to have a channel manager piece of software that's going to manage your Airbnb bookings and your bookings, booking.com bookings and your cottages.com bookings, if you use those as well. Now all of a sudden you've got a bit of a, you know, maybe an hour or two of IT a month to stay on top of all that, and maybe you're not great at IT. And did you factor in the £30 a month for the channel manager? Did you factor in the 3% for Airbnb that they take from the property owner, etc., etc.? So just be mindful of this being a business. You wouldn't set up you wouldn't set up an Amazon drop shipping business on 2 hours a week, but actually that is advertised loads. do it in 10 minutes a week and make £5,000 a month. But my point is, nothing comes without hard work. You know, turning 145 quid a month profit into a grand a month profit, that's amazing. but it takes four times as much work. So just be aware of that, really, would be my suggestion.
You kind of painted a great picture and got me all excited about holiday lets in a few ways, obviously financially, but then talking of jacuzzis and beers and fish and chips got me thinking, yeah, that sounds good, actually. Got me ready to jump on Airbnb later and see what I can go and book.
Did I then pop the balloon in the next day?
you then mentioned some pants hanging in one of the rooms.
It spoilt the image.
Yeah, really good insight into it.
Can I give you a fourth one, Royce? Right. I know I'm interrupting you. Can I give you a fourth one? And you've just reminded me of it now, and it's so important. People think to themselves, well, it'll be great just to have somewhere where we can stay when it's empty. You know, it'll be a free holiday let. And they'll actually buy a place that they kind of want to stay in, and then they think, oh, well, I'll do it as a holiday let as well, and it will be a great free place to go on holiday and a great holiday let. And my advice is, don't bother. If you're going to do it as a business, do it properly as a business and take the profit and go on holiday where you really want to go. And if you want a holiday home for yourself that you can go to whenever you want, and you can have it, you know, with your surfboards in it or your mountain bikes in it or whatever, and it's just for you with your clothes in the cupboard when you get there, and that, just do that. That mixing of it, I have done it. I've done it both ways. I've done it where I never stay somewhere and it's just a business, and I've done it where I've done it as a hybrid, and I've done it where I don't let it out, it's just for me. And I tell you what, the first and the third one are much better. The hybrid is really hard to get that balance. So that would be my fourth mistake. Don't mix the two. It's either a doodad, to use Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Poor Dad phrase, where it's something that costs you money, it's a luxury, it just is contributing to your happiness and you're happy to pay for that luxury, or it's a business and it puts money in your pocket every month. Don't confuse the two. So that would be my fourth one, mate. Sorry to interrupt, but I think it's a valuable one.
No, that's great. Yeah, no, you've summarized it really well. You've highlighted to us that it's not quite as easy as what people might think it is, but you've given us some real good insights and tips into how we can look to maximize it if it is something that we're going to get ourselves into going forward. It's definitely something I would love to be involved in going forward. I can see the opportunities, but I also see that it's a challenge as well, like anything in life, isn't it? It's the more money you make, the harder it's going to be, which is the reality of most things.
Absolutely.
Thanks a lot, Frank. You can check out the show notes on our website, which is www.ethicalpropertypartners.com/podcast. You can have a look at all the previous episodes there as well. Don't forget to look out for next week's episode, which will be available every Thursday. Plus, we'll be dropping in some caffeine casts every now and then, so keep a lookout for those. Thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have, and taken loads of value out of that, and we hope to see you again next week. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Royce.
Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.